Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
All right, welcome in, everybody, and happy Thursday to you. Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times Union in the house. I'm Mike Dempsey. Fat Tony's here in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Time for Jaguars Today on this Thursday morning. All right, Ryan, got a chance to spend a little time with the GM yesterday, didn't you?
I did. Came in yesterday morning, sat in his office for a little while just to get a state of the team and touched on a bunch of different topics.
And what surprised you, or what didn't surprise you, I guess, so much?
Nothing really surprised me. Because you talk to Dave Caldwell every now and then at games and stuff, and you sort of get a feel. You can sort of tell by his mood. I think the last two games have allowed him to say there is some reason for optimism, so that gave him a little bit of an opening. You know, I asked him a follow up a couple of times. You're not even a little bit disappointed. Let's throw out 0-6 for a minute. The fact that you weren't competitive in a couple of these games, even though you added some players in free agency and you had another draft class, a lot of those guys were playing. And he said, you know, one of the things they wanted to do in the first half of the season, they wanted to make sure they were more competitive. I mean, they thought there'd still be a lot of growing pains, a lot of transition. That's why the second half of the Philadelphia game, the first half of the Indy game, and the entire Washington game were disappointing. But, I feel he's it just confirms that him and Gus are on the same page publicly, that, you know, their thoughts are aligned. I mean, and God knows I would have loved for him to say, this is unacceptable.
Of course, which goes immediately nationally. They pick that story up, and Jack's GM says, this is unacceptable, disappointed in his team, da-da-da-da-da. And I think it's probably smart from that perspective to have that kind of one-voice mentality going on. But there's got to be some disappointment. But look, I can't get myself inside of Dave Caldwell's head, but if I were in his shoes, I know I would be disappointed. I don't think they expected to be 0-6, and I understand they've been more competitive the last couple of weeks, but I think they expected this defense, for one thing, to be consistently better than it has been. It's picked up over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and that's the thing is a couple of things that we all said with a lot of confidence in the preseason was they're going to be better on defense. Well, they haven't. And they're going to be able to run it better, which they haven't. So those two things are a big reason why they're still stuck on the offer. Because even if this offense was humming a little bit better, probably record would have been the same. Because I think Pittsburgh would have done what it took to win. I mean, and then same, I think, you know, did they give away the Tennessee game? I don't think so. I think Tennessee won the game.
Well, I think Tennessee won the game as well, but the Jags certainly shot themselves in the foot on numerous occasions. You and I mean, it's pointless to debate what their record would have been. I do think
6-0.
Well, no. It certainly if they were scoring 20 points a game, just that, you know, they would have had a lot better chance to win. And I understand situations are different. You're at the end of this football game here against Tennessee. They've got a 9-point lead with 3 minutes left. They may be playing you defensively mm-hmm. differently. You know, and ultimately it took the Jags 8 or 9 plays to drive down and score that touchdown. It wasn't like you were just going chunk, chunk, chunk mm-hmm. down the field at will in that circumstance.
Yeah, I mean, even when Tennessee was clearly playing basically a prevent, it took the Jags a long time to move down the field. Which resulted, okay, you get 36 seconds with the onside kick. Instead, if you're able to score a little bit quicker, you have some more time to get in the range. But the one thing we talked about is the game that they're going to look back on is they should have been up 23-0 at Philly at halftime. And, okay, that means, well, they've still lost? You don't know, but I think
that's four scores basically.
Yeah, it would
right because you're not coming out going for 2-point conversions early in the third quarter for Philly.
It would have been tough for even this team to collapse under that.
You would hope in those circumstances. The running game has been terrible. Well, I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's just been really bad.
And
I know what Dave Caldwell said in your story, which you can read in the Florida Times Union, of course, or online at jacksonville.com, that last year it was multiple things going wrong on a given running play. So this year it's only one, but it seems like it's consistently at least one on every single play. I mean, they're just not, if they were ripping off the occasional 30, 40 yard run, which they're just not. Now maybe they had a couple of cuts that they've missed, and he said that, you know, sometimes it's one guy missing a block, sometimes it's one guy missing the hole that's there. But it just, I mean, look, we're at the point now where if a guy were to run for 50 yards, we would do a backflip.
Well, Blake rushes for, when scrambles for 11, you see the first down marker moving. That's like a huge play.
Right.
You know, and when, my question to Dave on that was, I said, hey, the running game up here is broken. What gives you hope that it can be fixed? And that was his answer, that basically what he was saying, it doesn't suck as much as it did last year.
Right.
You know,
but
so
it doesn't suck for as many reasons as it did last year.
So, I mean, from their perspective, is that maybe they feel are they closer to breaking out than they were last year? But, I mean, I asked Gus yesterday, and people sort of scoffed at it, and he looked at me weird. I said, why even try and run it? Why don't you just throw it 70 times?
Well, there have been games when they haven't really tried to run it.
You're 0-6. Just go, you know. Yeah, and it was somewhat tongue in cheek, but you know, if you're going 0-1, -1, -2, what's the point? And he says, well, it's about wearing down the defense and getting the play action, blah 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 blah. But you know,
you only get the play action, or
if you're running it well,
if you're running effectively, or you only have effective play action. And we talked about this all week. If your first chance to win, I mean, I understand these are the play designs, but don't you have drops in a two-minute type situation that don't require a play fake to a running back that nobody is respecting? Mm-hmm. That was just odd to me. And I'm not singling that out as the reason they lost the football game or anything like that, but Tennessee guys were running straight up field past that fake. What's the point?
Yeah, I didn't get that. I was, because Gus talked a lot yesterday about play action, so I went back and see how much they did it. And I think Blake threw like 13 times after doing a play action. And I was like, and I got
there. There were a number of them on that touchdown drive that ended with the touchdown with Clay Harbor.
Yeah, and that's what I was getting at is part of me is like, do I even watch this drive? Well, I'm glad I did, because he was in the shotgun. He'd fake a Denard. And, I mean, you add all those up, is that an extra 5 or 6 seconds?
In total time.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I mean, we're really splitting hairs now.
But that's the thing, though, and it worked out, honestly, because I don't think it really mattered. I don't think time was an issue at the end. And maybe if they had 5 or 6 seconds on the clock, they would have been more emboldened to go for it on third down. I think they had plenty of time to do it anyway. I think they were just afraid of, you know, making that catastrophic mistake was going to cost them a game.
Well, yeah, and
or cost them an opportunity.
That, I mean, the fact that you kicked it at 12, that was the acknowledgement of they got a lot of rookies on the field,
right?
And the pass protection was leaky the whole second half. How about if they send everybody and Bortles doesn't have time to throw, or even throw it away?
I'm sorry, you put them in shotgun, and if it's a jailbreak, you just throw it straight out of bounds. You got to try.
I acknowledge that point.
Right. Well, this guy's got to be your future quarterback. This is a great opportunity for him, and I know you want to win the game, and you're in position, and Scobie can hit a 55-yard field goal, but I just felt like he was playing not to lose as opposed to playing to win. You play to win, you go for it on third down. You try to pick up another 7 yards on an out. I mean, and for all the knocks on the play calling, Jed Fish got Allen Hurns wide open based on the design of that play. Who's to say he couldn't pull another one where you get a guy open on a sideline route?
Yeah. You know, would he have made a 47-yarder?
I don't know. But, well, the difference is I do think it's in your head that you got to drive it a little lower. Was that the reason that it got blocked? I don't know. But it's certainly an issue of trajectory at some point. You know, the further you are away, for all we know, if that ball doesn't get blocked, it's going to hook at the last second. We just don't know what would happen to that football.
Instead, they were bitching about how the K-well was like getting it.
Yeah. All right. 641-1010. If you want to get in today, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Hauer, and Fat Tony here with you. And today's Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asks you about Dave Caldwell, other than the draft selection of Blake Bortles, which I think unanimously would win as the best move that Dave Caldwell has made as the general manager here to this point. What is the single best and single worst move that you think the GM has done. So the good and the bad with Dave Caldwell. You can weigh in on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, of course, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well, facebook.com/JaguarsToday. All right, we'll just get rolling today. Phone lines open to you at 641-1010. Agent Gibbs in for Lauren Brooks. So treat him very nicely. Jaguars Today live at Everbank Field continues in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Right, here we go on this Thursday afternoon. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is the number. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. The fan feedback spotlight today. Simply best and worst moves Dave Caldwell has made as his time as a general manager, excluding the Blake Bortles draft pick. Mm-hmm. We'll hear from Jed Fish here coming up in a moment. I'm a little distracted trying to buy some tickets online to the Who. Well, some pre-sale tickets here, Tony. I got to figure out what my budget is. I like the Who. I don't know if I like them at $300 a pop per ticket.
Where does that get you?
Seems like a lot. Gets you on the floor down in front.
It's a lot.
I don't know if I need to be down on the floor in front.
Because, no, you want to be able to sit down.
Yeah. I don't want to have to stand the whole time if I don't want to.
Yeah.
Although, you might choose to stand the whole time.
But being in a seat allows you to sit down for a minute.
Yeah. Well, I would assume if you're on the floor, there's probably seats on the floor. There's probably chairs down on the floor.
Tearing apart the chairs and throwing them on stage.
That would be awesome. If Pete Townsend smashes a guitar, I am smashing something
right
in the arena.
Then it doesn't matter where you're sitting in that arena. Everyone's rushing.
Everyone is ripping apart. Right. There will be a frenzy. I want a piece of that Fender Stratocaster or whatever he plays. I don't have any idea what kind of guitar he plays.
What kind of fan are you?
I don't know, man. I just know he's going to smash something at some point.
He just digs the music, guys.
I like the music. Yep. What's wrong with that? I don't care. I couldn't name the guys that replaced Keith Moon and John Entwistle either. Doesn't matter to me. Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey will be there, and they'll be playing all the standards that I love. And they might even play some new stuff or something like that that I can go out and get a beer from the lobby during that time. That's not how concerts right?
There you go. That's why you don't get the floor seats. It's easier to go get a beer.
That's a good point, too. That and the $300 a pop.
Yeah.
For me. I'm just not. That's not my
it's my last chance, man. Who knows if they'll ever be back here again.
Yeah. Oh, last chance. Who knows if they will, but I was told it was the last chance back in the late 80s, too. All right?
This is 50 years of this band.
I can even remember some of that concert. And
can you?
Yes.
I'm actually surprised.
Some of it I can remember. It was phenomenal. 3 hours, no opening act, didn't need one, nonstop, just played it all. Played the entirety of Tommy and everything else that you'd want to hear.
I wonder if 30 years later, they can still do a 3-hour set. I just don't know if they have it in them anymore, especially on tour.
I bet they're going to do a solid 2.
Yep.
That'd be fine. 2-hour concert's great. Yep. Fantastic.
16, 17 songs.
Yeah. Whatever it comes out to, I'll be there in some form or fashion.
Me too.
I don't know if I want to go to the cheapies, though. I don't know if I want the upper deckers either. Something maybe in the middle.
Well, and I'm considering, too, because I have a couple friends of mine that I may be bringing with me as like a Christmas present on this thing. So there's that in my mind as well as I'm trying to
figure
out.
Oh, they get the upper deck.
Why? Well, they're going to sit with me. Wherever I'm going to sit, they're coming with me.
Here's your ticket. We'll see you after the concert.
Right. No, they're going to sit with me. I just have to figure out how much I'm willing to spend doing that kind of thing.
So. Would you rather be upper deck but closer to the stage or lower but all the way in the back?
Upper.
See, I think so too, right? Yeah. You want the proximity, even if the angle is from on high. I think that's the way to go.
Sure.
Those seats are fine. I went to see the Eagles there in the upper deck. They're fine.
It's fine, yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So I'm a little bit distracted by all this stuff going on today. So you guys talk amongst yourselves over there. Let's hear from Jed Fish, Jaguar offensive coordinator. Don't worry. It's sound bites. It's not like if he'd like to come in, if Jed would like to come in and make a speech for the next 10 minutes, that would be a big help as well. He probably could. So let's get to it right now. Jed Fish talked about the Jags and the offense. And one of the big things is, they moved the ball last week. You got to get in the end zone more. You can't settle for field goals. And certainly field position played a big factor in the game last week in terms of the offense, starting everything except for that final drive after the onside kick from the 20 yards in. And as you, I think, were the first to point out on Twitter after the game, it's the first place I saw that, would have noticed it.
Which was?
About the Jags starting field position. That they had started all their drives.
Yeah.
None of them outside the 20 until they recover the onside kick.
Yeah, and that was like, it was, what was it, 9-10 drives? So that's where, this offense isn't equipped to go 80 yards on a regular basis.
It's a lot to ask. Yes. Right, because you're having to go 7 yards, 10 yards, 3 yards. Yeah. It's not, you're not going 30 yards, 30 yards. And when they did, when they hit the big play to Clay Harbor, well, it resulted in a touchdown. Yeah. So there you go. All right. Jed Fish talked about the need for this Jaguar offense to finish drives.
We have to finish. We talk about it every day. We're talking about it more and more and more. I mean, we can't be up 17-0 in Philly and have two more drives going down into the red zone and 3rd and 5 from the plus 19, not convert there. You know, had a chance to be up 23 or 27-0. We can't have a game against San Diego. We're up 14-10, have the ball again and don't finish a couple drives there. We, you know, should have found a way to get a couple more scores against Pittsburgh. We had drives and we just stalled. You can't be 53%, 64% on third down, whatever we've been to the last 3 weeks, even 40% against a really, really good Indy team and not finish more drives. We're getting close because when we're inside the 20, I think we've scored a touchdown almost every time, our red zone touchdown percentage, when we get inside the 20. We've done a really good job there, excluding a week ago. We just have to get in there, and we can't walk away with field goals like we did against Pittsburgh. We've got to walk away with some touches.
Hey, real quick, is if on the sound you can hear sort of that drum sound?
It's him banging.
That he uses like a chopping
chop,
motion
chop, chop,
to
chop.
Make his points, and the podium is like hollow. So it sounds like boom, boom.
That's because he lost a bet at Miami because Florida State beat him so many times. He had to chop the podium.
Oh, is that it?
In his time for the next
little
few
Seminole
years.
Smack talk here in the middle of the Jed Fitch talk.
That's very little right there.
I mean, he talks about finishing drives.
Yes.
You got to do a better job at starting drives.
That's true, too. So. But he said, you know, the red zone percentage is good. They're just not getting to the red zone nearly enough. And that's been an issue. By the way, speaking of the smack talk, I get the stay classy. Yesterday, as I all season long, I get Oriole fans chirping at me on Twitter. I had a good day on Twitter yesterday after I don't know what time that game wrapped up with Kansas City getting the brooms out, and I get the stay classy. It's sports smack talk. Are you kidding me? It's not supposed to be classy. You stay classy.
It's not like you're saying it's not like you're saying now you lost. I hope the plane goes down.
No, I didn't say. I just said, hey, I know what I pointed out. I said I tweeted out a picture of some brooms, and then
that's not classy. That's funny,
right? And then I followed up with what do the Yankees and Orioles have in common this year? Neither one of them won the World Series. Said, what do they not have in common? 27 championships. And that's the one I got stay classy on. I thought, that's just, you know. Yankee arrogance.
That's right. The whole world is sick of the Yankees, except for Yankees fans.
I love it.
Yeah. And
what's next?
They enjoy it. Jed Fish also talking yesterday about, look, we've talked about the problems in the run game. And that they're really getting nothing out of that part of the offense right now. He said that the entire offense is responsible for getting that run game going.
It's on all 11. We've got to find a way to help us, whether it be the right check, whether it be the right identification by the quarterback, whether it be the receiver finishing a block. There was a few of those last week. Whether it be the tight end and the having Mercedes Lewis play helped our running game those few weeks in, a year ago. Our tight ends have to continue to step up in the running game, and our offensive line has to step up. So I don't want to ever put it on a player. I think it's on all 11 and us as coaches to continue to find a way to run the football.
Yeah, you go back to the preseason. Mike Pettine was a bit of the laughing stock in the NFL, wasn't he?
He really was.
Just the way, you know, oh, this high school coach coming in here, he's not handling the situation very well and all this stuff. And, you know, could they have put Manziel in his place a little bit more? Perhaps so. But he ultimately went with the guy he felt was going to give him a better chance to win rather than the guy that the organization invested in.
Yeah, I mean, with Pettine, it took him a while to get to common sense. But once he got there and announced Hoyer, it definitely ended up being the right move. It's just like, okay, he sort of...
He let the circus play out
a little bit around. Yeah, you know, it's like teams always talk about distraction. Well, they created their own distractions.
If they didn't, some of the ones they didn't create, they didn't tamp down very well. With Johnny Manziel, you know, the whole, I'm going to change my ways when I get into the National Football League and all this, and then, you know... Then he goes, well, I'm never going to change for anybody, basically, you know. So Jetfish talked about, though, the job Mike Pettine has done.
I was with Mike for 4 years in Baltimore. He's really, really smart and really, really good, and he provides a lot of conflicts for you. You know, you just, once you expect a front, he gives you a different front. When you expect a coverage, he gives you a different coverage. He plays to the personnel he has. His Baltimore personnel was different than the Jets personnel. The Jets was different than Buffalo. So I think he's going to play to, you know, what he's got. You know, he's going to provide some issues for us, that's for sure.
That was off of my question, is how does Pettine's defense from last year, Buffalo came down here late, differ from the Cleveland one? Complete non-answer. Pretty much.
He talked about Mike Pettine, though, yeah. Which was nice. I do wonder, he talks about giving you different looks and stuff like that. I do really wonder. I mean, Alex Mack is maybe the best guy at his position, and it is becoming a more important position for a team that has had success predicated by being able to run the football consistently all year long. How much do you think that's a loss this week?
I think it's a big loss, but it's something the Jaguars haven't been able to take advantage of. They faced a backup center with Indy. They faced a third-string center in San Diego, and it didn't really matter. The one thing, and you mentioned Alex Mack, and I talked to Dave Caldwell about this yesterday, their pursuit of Mack in April. He goes, look at the Cleveland line before the injury they had. Alex Mack at center, rookie guard Betonio at left guard, and a Pro Bowl left tackle in Thomas. That helps the left guard rookie. So that's what they're thinking, is have Alex Mack at center. You have
Joe Thomas.
You know, yeah, if he would have came to the Jaguars.
If
you had Mack at center, you would have had Beatles at left guard. It maybe would have, if you would have ended up taking Linder, maybe it would have eased his transition at right guard. Didn't happen. So, you know, what he's getting at is the center sort of helps everybody else rise their level of play. So it'd be interesting to see how Cleveland reacts.
And especially, too, because I think you had a pretty good inclination, if you're Dave Caldwell, that you're going to be taking a quarterback who's probably going to play early.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I mean, they had settled on Bortles by then.
Right. Very interesting answer, by the way, in your column yesterday, or I don't know if it was a direct answer to something you asked him, but despite the, we're going to let him sit all year, we're comfortable with that, and then we had a hunch it might play out this way after 2.5 games that we're glad we had Chad because he might not have been quite ready, that Blake, and I'm paraphrasing here, yeah, kind of need to settle down mentally and ease his way into the season. But we had a pretty good hunch it might end up this way.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I was like, huh? Because I sort of did like a ha. And then he kept answering. But.
Right. He just went right past that. All right. What's next, Tony?
That's kind of his style. We've been talking about this young wide receiver group as well, and they're all growing up together. Jetfish said yesterday that they are getting better.
They're improving. Alan Hearns is improving just because he hasn't had maybe the same amount of production as he had the first two games or whatnot, or the first game. But he's getting better. Allen Robinson, for sure. I mean, I think the last couple of weeks he's had 15 catches in 2 weeks or something like that. Okay, I hear you, Ryan. So he's had some, you know, opportunities there to continue to get the ball and continue to make plays. We're going to continue to give him those chances. I think he's just going to get better. You know, I really do. And then with that, we got to get Marquise Lee going as well. And it'll be fun having him back after a couple of weeks, you know.
Well, I'll ruin the bit. That was Ryan Robinson who.
Oh, was that Robinson? Okay.
You know, I couldn't tell. But I think Jed hit on a good point there. This week, I want to see more out of Marquise Lee. You know, he missed the three games. They eased him back in, which was probably the right move. He said yesterday he felt his wind getting back. He felt stronger as the game went on last week. It's time to start stretching this field and getting him more involved.
I'm going
to
risk incurring your wrath by pointing out that Logman said because they play so much man, he thinks that Marquise Lee, this is the best opportunity he's had to maybe break out a little bit, or a good chance to have his best performance of the season.
Yeah, that's what they need. Is like we're talking about the field position stuff. Is it's great to get a 59-yard play from Clay Harbor. You probably can get one of those a game. So can you get a 25 or 26-yard catch out of Lee? And also you look at Cleveland's corners. I was talking to a Cleveland reporter. They don't think Joe Hayden's been the same since he was beat by Cecil Shorts last December. So he's struggling. Justin Gilbert, if he's on the field, go after him because
right,
he's struggling. And then Buster, the other corner, he's not
Buster Screen.
Yeah, he's not great either, so there could be some chances to do that.
All right, then finally from Jed Fish, talked about the lack of balance on offense.
We haven't been able to get enough balance because we haven't been able to, our scores have dictated so much 2 minute. So it bothers me there because I'd love to be able to have more of a lead and then be able to run the clock rather than fight the clock.
I guess the only time they've been able to do that was the Houston Thursday night game, like to run the 4 minute drill. Because all these other times it's been, you know, either they got the ball, took a knee, game over, or, you know, they took a knee a couple of times, or like somebody else threw a Hail Mary to end the game and fell incomplete. So
right.
I think, you know, you could defend the lack of rushing attempts because you fell behind. That's natural.
All right, we will open the phone lines up to you at 641-1010. Also, hear from Blake Bortles and Cecil Shorts. Coming up, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran. Fat Tony here with you. Invite you to weigh in on the fan feedback spotlight today. Dave Caldwell, best and worst moves outside of drafting Blake Bortles. So we assume that is your best move that you would list for Dave Caldwell in his brief tenure as general manager here. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Oh, this is also yesterday's music theme, now, wasn't it? Searching. Picky, Ryan. I want the best experience in my price range. And I want
You buried the lead there.
That's the key. I want but that's the thing. I don't want to settle. I want to continue to hit the search button until I find the exact best seat I can find in my price range. What I'm looking for, man. Why is that funny to you, sir? I don't.
Well, makes you like everybody else, pretty much.
I guess. But, you know, that's what I'm doing. Not everybody else is doing that in the middle of a live radio broadcast. So it makes it more difficult. I'd probably have this thing nailed down by now.
Well, keep trying.
If I didn't have to pay attention to you.
I'll do the next read.
Thank you. That's awesome. JTech coming up. We'll tell them all about it. Foundation Professionals of Florida giving away a pair of tickets today to Jacksonville, Cleveland, on our Facebook contest. The entry is closed right now. Foundation Professionals of Florida does look for the next photo contest for tickets to a future Jaguar game. You can call Foundation Pros of Florida at 287-2690. Visit foundationprosfl.com as well if you've got issues with your home's foundation or just want to have the peace of mind that you don't have issues with your home's foundation. They are certified, licensed, and insured to take care of all those kind of problems you may have. So give them a call, again, at 287-2690. I'll hear a little bit from Blake Bortles here coming up, but let's get to the phone lines first at 641-1010. If you'd like to get on board, talk a little Jaguar football. David. Oh, David just dropped off.
David.
Right there. David, what are you doing to us? We'll go to Blake then. We'll hear from you instead. And Blake, again, kind of dovetailing with what Jed Fish was talking about, what he began with, talked about there needs to be a more of an emphasis right now on finishing drives for the Jaguars.
Gus has been big all week on, you know, the attention to detail and the little things. And those are obviously the things that finish drives, you know, a missed block here, a missed throw here, whatever. Those things stick out when you start getting close. So those are obviously the things we got to tighten up and improve on.
Well, I think one of the keys on finishing this week is, you know, both of their turnovers came on the plus side of the field. Obviously, the Hearns slipped on the interception, but they're just right before that play happened. It was a third and long. I was thinking, okay, do they run a draw to guarantee themselves a three? Well, they ended up passing, and it was an interception. And then obviously, the Shorts fumbled around the 14 or 10 of the Titans, so that would have been some points. So finish drives, but also you got to limit those turnovers.
Absolutely. I mean, look, it's not just those, but there were probably 6 to 8 plays in the football game that if they make one or two, and that being said, everything else doesn't always happen the same way, clearly, but if they did, you're talking about winning the football game. I mean, you go certainly to the field goal is the most obvious one because they were still in position to win. Mm-hmm. Could have made it a lot easier.
The frustrating is, look, 3 of those plays were on one drive. The Todman drop, the Harbor overthrow, and the interception were all on the same drive for the Jags. And I was saying the same thing in the room. I was like, why aren't they running? I know people get on to Jed for being too conservative, but and this is the spot to be conservative and get yourself a field goal.
Yeah, especially I think when you're point challenged to start with.
Right.
If it's there, take it. You can get greedy when you're scoring 25 points a game.
Sure.
So,
and it's different when it's 3rd and 6 and 3rd and 13. That's a huge difference in the National Football League. Blake, He's seen another 3-4 defense this week. He's seen a bunch of them. He talks about the looks he's getting from opposing defenses.
I think they're doing a lot of stuff. You know, I think we've seen a lot of different things. We've seen pressure. We've seen different looks. We've seen guys drop off and play coverage. You know, I think it goes into their game plan and what they think is going to work, and obviously the feel they get during the game and how the game's going along and the type of vibes they're getting.
I was hoping for something when I asked him that, because Cleveland didn't blitz one time last week against Roethlisberger. They just say we're going to drop 7, sometimes 8, sort of keep an eye on him, make, if he doesn't, if he scrambles. And they had, he had to throw a lot of dink and dunks. So it'd be interesting to see what Pettine does against Blake Bortles. I think he'll probably send some more pressure just to test him.
I don't get a sense that Blake's been confused a ton. At this point, I think he's done, you know, in terms of going to the right spot. I mean, he made a bad throw, like the Clay Harbor, you know, he overthrew, missed an open. That's going to happen. You're going to make some bad physical mistakes. I don't think he's made too many glaring mental ones. Now, certainly he's made a few, and some of those interceptions you'd like to have back. And it almost seems to me like a very high percentage of the times he has made that bad read, he's had the bad or the misfortune of having it picked off.
Yeah.
You know, so, which you got to certainly cut those down. But for a guy, again, who's got no running game to really balance things out and the percentage of time they're having him throw the football, I think you can live with what you've seen very happily up to this point. He also talked about Allen Robinson, who Jed Fish talked a little bit about as well. Rookie. He's got 30 passes so far this season. What does he see from this guy?
I think he does everything well. I mean, he's obviously a big guy that runs well. You know, he's physical. I think that, you know, it's not one guy or another. It just happens to be Allen, you know, in the read that pops open. So, I mean, that's just how that is.
Before the season, I thought if both Robinson and Lee are healthy, I probably wrote this, is I thought Robinson would have more catches, but Marquise would have more yards. Well, that's out the window with Marquise getting hurt, but Robinson, you can tell he just catches a lot of variety, a lot of different parts of the field, you know, a lot of different distances. You know, they haven't really gotten, I mean, I guess the Washington game, they went downfield to him, but he's going to be a guy that is going to be a security blanket and have six, seven catch games. And that those add up to an 85 catch season.
And I think, you know, we saw him in the brief times we saw him on the practice field this summer, show us some deep speed as well, or at least the ability. He's taken a few shots to him, and you haven't seen separation from him on those plays. He's got to learn to defend those balls better, if nothing else, you know, and at least make sure that the defender doesn't come away with the interception. But we know, I think he's got the ability, as he gets more comfortable, to get a little bit more separation, but also just to outfight guys for the football.
I think so, because that's the thing that popped out at me during those practices, is he generally won the 50-50 ball. You know, if they get into inside the 10-yard line, can he be a guy they throw the fade to? And do they run him out, you know, and then other parts of the field, do they run a deep post to him and say, go get it, you know, if you got one guy on you? So I think you're going to see, you know, his plate expanding as the weeks go on.
Blake talking about Allen Robinson there. He also talked about improvement from this wide receiver group as a whole.
I feel really comfortable with all of our guys. I think they're all doing a really good job. You know, it's the first time in a while everybody's been healthy, and you know, I know they're excited to get out there, and you know, it's been fun, and they've all, you know, really worked hard and competed throughout the week, you know, going through things and you know, finding ways to get open.
All right, more from Blake Bortles coming up. Let's hear a little bit from Cecil Shorts as well. Got a chance to weigh in on some of the stuff that's going on here. And Cecil came back last week, 16 targets, 10 receptions, over 100 yards, and practicing in full this week so far. So no setbacks. Of course, it's basically like when he came in the first time this season. Had the big first game, or in terms of amount of snaps that he played, didn't appear to have any setbacks, and then it was the next game that he went out again.
Yeah, and then so you're looking at this week as the big test, and you look at Marquise Lee. Okay,
can you get through? Right.
Can you get through the two games and the 2 weeks of practice? So it's it'd be interesting to know, are they managing it? Are they managing it differently? They're not listed on the injury report, but are they taking fewer reps during team drills?
Cecil talked about the need to make plays when it's time to make plays.
When opportunities come, you got to make the plays. You know, if it's in the run game, get the run game going. Receivers make sure they're blocking outside. Line make sure they're blocking. Quarterback make sure he's making the right mic call. If it's, you know, he's throwing the ball, our job to make the tough catch or, you know, make the routine play, whatever the case may be. And no turnovers. We can't have, you know, fumbles on the five, an interception because of a slip route. You know, we can't have stuff like that to kill. That kills drive.
There's no doubt that it does. He also talked about his thoughts on number five, Blake Bortles, thus far.
Five is special. I think you saw that the last couple of weeks. I don't know, close to 70% completions. I mean, 300 yards the last couple of weeks. He is something special. The way he moves in the pocket, extend plays, run. I think management did a good job of, you know what I mean, getting him in here. So he's exciting to play with. He's fun to play with. And you know, I think you'll see a lot of good stuff moving forward.
There were so many people. There was a good number of people when he got selected that swore because of the school he played for, because of the system that he played in, because of, you know, he wasn't a four-year star, all these different things, that he was the next you-know-who, right? And was it Gil Brandt? Somebody kind of redid the first round, what it would look like right now if you, you know, redid it about two weeks
Brandt.
Ago. It was a Gil,
yeah.
And he had Houston taking Bortles number one. I found it interesting. Mike Patton said yesterday, I guess he was just asked about it, obviously. It's natural. Would you have taken Bortles had the Jags not selected him? He said, no, we wouldn't have. And then he said, I was surprised, and I think a lot of people were surprised at how high he went based on the mocks we were seeing.
Thanks for reading, Mike.
What? What are you talking? I mean, aren't they the ones who look at us and say, oh, these mock drafts aren't worth anything? Are you telling me Mike Patton is getting his intelligence for the Cleveland Browns on what some writers throw out there in terms of mock drafts?
Yeah, that was interesting. And then the other one was that they had Manziel great ahead of Bortles. Well, everybody says, liar, liar. And, well, I don't know if his pants were on fire, but it's, say, I'm doing shtick. These teams.
I wish you could have seen that. That was funny.
These teams, if I want a guy graded higher than another guy, I make sure, you know. So I didn't really buy, I didn't really think too much of that one, but the mock draft thing was like.
I was like, really? I mean, you're.
I know they look at it, but they look at it for entertainment purposes and look, oh, look how wrong that one
right.
is.
Right. And he was indicating that, boy, that gave us a pretty good feeling of where these guys were going to come off the board.
Then he should have been surprised, except for the Times Union mock draft.
Yeah, you know, except for that, of course. And you did say if there's a quarterback to keep your eye on, if the Jags were going to go that way, that would be the guy that they would take. I don't see how now you wouldn't look, any quarterback needy team wouldn't look at what this guy has done and say, this is the guy that we're going to build around, because he had all the physical attributes, you think, you know, and Dave Caldwell even said in your piece, we were surprised that his athleticism was as good as it was, you know, because he was like a 4.9 guy. But I think it was more a question of, did he have all the rest? Was the jump going to be too big for him, the level of competition, even though Bridgewater played the same conference?
Yeah, that obviously, you look at some of the games that Blake played, you know, at Penn State, at Louisville, against Baylor in a BCS bowl game. So he faced good teams. But, you know, one of the Jaguars' big points when they drafted Bortles, and people said, well, you had other needs. Why didn't you wait a year? A, you never know where you're going to draft.
Right.
B, and this is the bigger part, judging by how things are going, if you waited a year, I mean, do you really want Jameis in this building every day? What's Marcus Mariota? Has he leveled off at all? Is he going to keep getting better? You know, there are no sure things, but if you feel strongly about a guy, then you would have about any of these guys coming in. I mean, it was the right move.
Well, I mean, we had people calling last year all the time when we were in heavy draft mode. Pretty much by this time in the season, because they're getting crushed every week, and we're just more making a conscious decision to put off, you know, let's focus on what's in front of us right now. But there were tons of people that would call up and say, don't take a quarterback this year. Wait a year for Jameis. And again, how do you know? How do you know how you're going to feel about him? How do you know if he'll stay healthy? How do you know if you'll be in position to get him? What if you're picking fourth and there are three guys you really like?
Yeah.
And you can't get any of them, you know? I mean, it's just, you're right. You can't wait. And Dave Caldwell said right away, and I tend to believe him, that they felt that if Blake had been in this year's upcoming draft, that he would have been the best guy available.
And it he's probably right.
Yeah.
The way
it's looking right now.
Because he doesn't look, if he was at UCF this year, you know, he'd probably be a Heisman candidate. Everybody else is giving away autographs and, you know, can't stay out of trouble. So I mean, I think he would have continued his upward climb, whereas these other guys maybe would have fallen off a little bit.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on this date, October the 16th of 2005. San Diego Charger running back LaDainian Tomlinson ran for 140 yards and a touchdown, which ran his NFL record streak to 18 straight games with a rushing score. The previous mark had been 13 by George Rogers and whom? Huh? Whom?
Eric Dickerson.
Oh, come on, Washington Redskin fan. John Riggins, of course. Everybody knows that. Crazy talk.
Not fan. Fan of the nickname, but not fan of the team.
Weren't you a fan of the team growing up?
No.
Really?
Vikings.
So you're just...
Yeah, he's from that area.
Yeah.
I'm confused. I could have sworn.
No,
so you're
Ozier.
Just a fan of...
Ozier's the...
Oh, is it Ozier?
Yeah. Yes.
I think they look so much alike.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know...
Why taking shots at Osh like that?
I got it completely confused. Come on, NFL writer. Everybody knew that. As I change the qualifications there. That's what happened on this date in football history. Brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, featuring the Stop Snoring Mouth Guard. If you or your loved one has an issue, give them a call, and you'll be glad you did. 620-9225, a certified Invisalign provider, and you can get 10% off all first-time customer initial visits as well. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Carolina Panthers rookie wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin missed practice yesterday after suffering what is being called a mild concussion during the Panthers' tie against the Bengals on Sunday. Benjamin came to the sideline after the hit from Vontaze Burfict that caused the concussion, passed the concussion protocol test on the sideline before going back into the game, but came into the team's facility on Monday morning complaining about a little headache. Burfict was penalized on that play, and the Panthers also sent video evidence of him twisting the ankles of Cam Newton and Greg Olsen to the league office. The league's response, a $25,000 fine for Burfict. Washington Redskins head coach Jay Gruden has come out and said that Robert Griffin III will be the team's starting quarterback as soon as he is, quote, ready physically and mentally. RG3 is still returning from that dislocated ankle he suffered week two against the Jags. Kirk Cousins, as the starter, has lost four games in a row while turning the ball over nine times in those losses. And hey, remember that stripper lawsuit involving Jerry Jones?
Who doesn't?
Apparently, the two sides went to mediation on October 3rd. They have agreed to an undisclosed settlement. The terms of that deal are undisclosed and will remain that way, given that both sides are barred from disclosing any of that information related to the settlement or discussing the case in the media.
So you're telling me that the undisclosed settlement terms were undisclosed because they were barred from disclosing them?
Yes.
Excellent.
That is exactly what I'm telling you.
Now, was that the one on the bus, or was this a different one?
No, this was the
photos?
The photos, the girl that allegedly was forced to take the photos, and then there were all those allegations in the lawsuit that we talked about one day here
yes,
on the show.
Yes, forced to take the photos. Doesn't seem like she had the worst of it in that room.
That was the least of the issues that were brought up in that lawsuit.
You would think so. You would think so with that. Brandon Marshall talked about
this.
Yeah, the AP story that you guys ran and it's been picked up elsewhere said basically they were a quarterback away from having a team in Miami. Who was that quarterback that he was?
It was a seven car.
A seven car. Our defense were studs offensively, said Marshall. I really thought we had a young group of guys that could have done some special things if we came together. Unfortunately, we didn't have that opportunity because they got hennied, according to Brandon Marshall.
Ouch.
I think he's landed in just a fine spot for himself right now.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great if Chad Henne responded today. I'm sure he'll just laugh it off. But, you know, Brandon Marshall had a lot of stuff going on himself during those times in Miami.
That's a good point. So, he was productive, though, despite that. I mean, numbers-wise, he's always been a productive guy. Speaking of the all-important numbers, the Web.com Fantasy Forecast today.
Oh, yeah.
From 2 until 3 o'clock, featuring the Fat Tony Fantasy Forecast focus on who knows what. But I'm sure, among other things, the Jags fantasy prospects this weekend as they go up against the Cleveland Browns. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in. Today's Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight, asking you to weigh in on Dave Caldwell best and worst moves that you've seen other than the drafting of Blake Bortles, which would be the runaway. Although we do have a runaway, I think, for the worst move. Not the best. We've got a late contender for the best move. We've got more of a variety, which is a good thing, I think, that you can point to several different things that you think were the best things that he has done. In one case, it's the thing he didn't do that is making people very happy about the job he's done up to this point. We'll get to that coming up towards the end of the show. 641-1010 if you want to get in. Your thoughts on this is a Cleveland team that's been able to score points, but they've been overall, they're the same team that got behind 28-3 to Tennessee.
Yeah.
Put it that way, at the half. Okay, or at least Tennessee had their 28 at the half. I don't know when Cleveland really began the comeback, but is this an opportunity for the Jags with Cecil Shorts, with Mark Easley, with as healthy a wide receiver core as they've had? Still missing Mercedes Lewis. I don't know if missing Toby Gerhart is, based on the way he'd been playing, is really much of a difference. How big of a shot do you think the Jags have to, if not explode, kind of break out by their standards offensively?
It's a funny line, break out by their standards. Can they hit 20?
Them, that would be a breakout, right? 20, 24 points.
I mean, it is an opportunity, and I base it on this, is the Browns, like you said, they came back from 25 down and won Tennessee. Last week they pumped Pittsburgh, which their history against the Steelers is like the Jaguars' history recently against the Colts. So Mike Pettin says breakthrough win. He said this is huge. I'm not gonna lie about it. To me, that means okay, you got a lot of young guys on your team. They're gonna let down. I mean, their next three are
certainly that possibility. Yeah,
their next three are at the Jags, home against the Raiders, home against the Bucks. Are they looking ahead saying they should be 6-2 in a couple weeks?
Based on the records, it's the easiest stretch any team will have in the entire season.
So does that provide an opening? I mean, I'd be surprised if Cleveland loses. So or the Jaguars.
I look at it as simple as this, and I think there is some reality to that, and I'm glad he admitted that was a big win, because you get sick of the same. It's the big game because it's this week's game. I get you have to focus on the opponent, and that's what they're trying to get their team to do. You don't have to give it 100% lip service. Yeah, you know what? Hey, this is a big game. It's a big game for our fans. It's a rivalry game. It's a divisional game. All these reasons. But it just comes back to, and I realize it's matchups, and things can change on a week-to-week basis. Maybe the Jags are getting healthier, Cleveland losing Alex Mack, but Pittsburgh comes in here and wins. Pretty low scoring, kind of ugly-ish game. And then the very next week, Cleveland's taking that same team apart.
Mm-hmm.
So what it means is they match up better with Pittsburgh right now than the Jags do, certainly. But it's hard to look past that. But that is such the week-to-week nature of the National Football League.
Yeah, I mean, Cleveland has the fewest, giveaways. They have two turnovers the whole year. That's the only way the Jays can win at this point. So.
Call them the Jays?
Jags.
Oh, okay. Sure.
So it doesn't match up for the Jaguars to get a win that way. But that said, there's going to be a game here at some point where the Jaguars get four turnovers and three short fields and score 28 points in the first half. I don't know when it's going to be, but there's going to be a game like Tennessee last year when everything went right and they just barely won.
Sunday. It's coming. 6-4-1-10. It could very well be. More on the Jags and Cleveland coming up. You're welcome to get on board as well. Tweet us today at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and weigh in on what you think. Since he's taken over the job, other than the drafting of Blake Bortles, what is the best single move that Dave Caldwell's made and the worst single move that he's made? We'll look back at some of your responses a little bit later on in the show. XL Primetime coming up less than an hour away. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today rolls on. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. I'm assuming no music theme today. I haven't really paid attention. I know we had a little bit of The Who. I think it's just good music by Agent Gibbs.
We're just rolling the hits, man.
Just rolling the hits. Thank you, Agent Gibbs, as Lauren Brooks has the day off. I think it's helmets and heels prep for next week, I believe, is the angle with that. And there's a lot that goes into that one-hour
show
before host every week. Which emanates, by the way, right,
I
right from here.
I just got myself in a doghouse by laughing at that line.
You did?
I'm sure I did.
Ah, it's all right.
By the way, we got breaking news here.
What do we have?
Jackson DeVille, our favorite mascot, will perform as scheduled Sunday after the Ebola sign. No suspension.
Yeah, I'd be shocked. I mean, he's been working, you know, but, not on game day.
But they said it'd be like they said. Well, it will be dealt with internally. Well, who cares how it's dealt with internally?
Okay. Well, but I mean, wouldn't you rather? People want to know: will he be out there? And I guess if by saying it'll be dealt with internally, you don't care about the details. But that means
no segue
he'll be
for
out
a week
there on the field. Maybe. I don't know. I think I saw him on the Segway. I'm telling you, I saw him last week. They had a bunch of tour buses.
He parks it right outside the door here.
Good for him. Yeah. I like to see him have the run of the place. I'm pro Jackson. I support him. I support him on pretty much all the issues.
Me too.
Right now. I'm not going to go any further down the road on that particular one. But that's just the way it is. One thing I wanted to bring up when Tony was doing the Honda drive around the NFL there, RG3, Jay Gruden comes out and says, yes, he will have the job back. And I understand it's an issue because he did leave the door open when Kirk Cousins got the job, and I think he played well in his first game. He's lost four in a row, though.
Sliced and diced this team.
Right. Well, that's true. He played well in relief.
37-34 against Philadelphia.
Since he's thrown seven interceptions in the last three games, I want to say.
Yeah.
Something like that. And
he's thrown for eight touchdowns in that time, by the way, too. I mean, his turnover to interception ratio, I do believe, is 8-8 in
right.
his time as a starter.
Which... if you're not a rookie, like Blake Bortles thrown good number of picks, but
sure.
you're going to have those growing pains with the first time you've ever played in the National Football League. And I get it, Kirk Cousins hasn't played a ton in the National Football League, but he's not a special physical talent. But my point in this whole thing is the fact that he left it open to begin with, and the fact that you have to reiterate that, yes, the guy that we spent two firsts and a second to move up from our own first, so basically three firsts and a second to draft, you have to ask this question about it. If Drew Brees missed a month, would anyone be asking the question in New Orleans?
Well, to me, if Jay Gruden was up there and said, "I swear to tell the truth, nothing but the truth," I mean, I'm sure his reaction would be, "Yeah, I got to go back to RG3."
Right. Well, it's not like Kirk Cousins. Do you think the organization, if Kirk Cousins was 3-1 in the last four games instead of 0-4, I mean, he just threw a killer pick at the end of that Arizona game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just laid it, just hung it out with nothing on it over the middle of the field. And Rashad Johnson picked it off and ran it back. And it was a one possession game at that point in time. If he was 3-1 and they were rolling it, let's say he won a couple more games before RG3 gets back, do you think they'd still force it down his throat at that point?
Well, I think they would be in major talk around it mode. I mean, it's still a legitimate question because he was the incumbent starter, because of the price he paid, because he's best buddies with the owner. That's the key one. If Cousins was 3-1, this team was near Philadelphia. You know, if you're Gruden, you'd have to tread carefully.
And I think, yeah, I think what would happen, too, is, as he said yesterday, RG3 will return when we believe he's physically and mentally ready to return, which is kind of weird.
Basically insinuating he doesn't know a playbook.
I don't know if it's that, or is he psychologically in the right frame? You know what I mean? Yeah. That's more the way I took it with him, as opposed to knowing the playbook. But regardless, I think that 100%, no one's... as we always hear, once the season kicks off, rarely is anyone ever 100%. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you've had 2 months off, you can get to that. But I think that rehab process, I think he'd want to see, I just want to see just a little bit more this week. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the way he would extend that tenure.
And if they were winning, he would say, hey, I'm sticking with the hot hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean, right, it's anything more than that at this moment. But there have been talk in D.C. right now about whether Colt McCoy should take over that football team.
That's hysterical.
Right. Well, that just goes to show you how dissatisfied they are with Kirk Cousins. And everyone, you know, who thinks back says, well, we don't need to draft a quarterback. Let's just trade for Kirk Cousins and get him in here.
Well, it shows you how pathetic this week two game was. Because
no question.
I mean, it looks worse every week.
I agree with you, because that's the one that stands out. When you say the schedule is lightening up, well, that one
should have been light.
The case, right. Especially for the defense. You could talk about who was playing quarterback all you like. the Jags aren't scoring any more points, really, than they were when Chad Henne was in there. And I'm not saying that it's clear Blake Bortles is a better quarterback. I mean, it's clear. He's playing better and all that. And I'm not disputing that one iota. But that doesn't excuse the fact that Kirk Cousins come in cold off the bench and just carve you up like that in week two.
Yeah.
Aaron Colvin, eligible to come off the physically unable to perform or the non-football injury list, I guess, and practice, I guess, beginning next week, right?
Yeah, he was eligible this week, and they delayed it a week, not because of the knee, but just he had just started really amping up his conditioning on the field 2-3 weeks ago, so they wanted to take another week to do that. So if he starts practicing next week, that starts a 21-day window. They can activate him to the 53 at any time. At 21 days, they got to make a decision, 53 or keep him on non-football injury, which would end his year. So
I think they want to play him,
right? They want to play him. I mean, the expectation – I mean, they didn't put any pressure on the re-ups, because they had that kind of flexibility to have a redshirt year. But now that he's come along, if he starts next week, that 21 days would take him up to Indianapolis in week 12.
So it begins when he hits the practice field for the first time.
The Jags have to send the league a note saying this player is now participating. So that's the paperwork. But, I mean, let's say he starts practicing next week. I mean, could you see him against Dallas and London. You know, that would be 17 days after he started practicing. I think so. Yeah. So it's not an automatic that they'll take the whole 21, you know, but I think we will see him in November.
If he turns out to be what he was and what most people thought he was going to be before the injury, we talk about the best moves by Dave Caldwell. We could be looking, you know, and I know there's been debate on this network, on this station, what have you, and, you know, it's legitimate, either side. Can the Jags afford to take those kind of chances? That's a move, like a team like San Francisco has made a lot of those over the last several years, drafting Marcus Lattimore. Hey, we'll give it a shot. We'll kind of let him have that red shirt year on the roster, and it really hasn't panned out. Tank Carradine's another guy they've done it with, but why not with a team in this? I think this team and being in this position, if you're a contender that's up against the salary cap every year and doesn't have the surplus of draft picks and you need to get somebody to keep you there, I think they felt like their team was strong enough. I think you can go opposite ends of the spectrum, can both afford to do that. If the Jags are like, you know what, whoever we pick in the fourth round is not going to put us over the top from being a playoff team or not a playoff team this year. If we can get a guy who's a first round talent a year from now, if we're patient, it's well worth it.
Well, I thought it was a bold move because it shows a guy who's comfortable in the GM seat here. Is a lot of GMs around the league would have said, I can't afford to take a fourth round pick on a guy who's not going to help me this year. I could be out of a job. You know, so has he started a little bit of a trend where first year GMs who know they have 3 or 4 years to build a team?
How many first year GMs know they have 3 or 4 years to build a team?
I would say all of them.
That many?
Yeah.
4 years?
A lot of GMs get two coaches.
Their own two? Yeah, I guess. All right. Let me ask you. Does Gus Bradley have the same degree of cover as Dave Caldwell does?
No. I think Gus has minimum 3 years.
Three full seasons.
Yeah.
No matter what the record is.
Well, let's just remove the offers. Because if you don't win a game over a course of a season, it's hard to justify anybody.
Right.
So, but I think they're going to win one.
That's enough.
At least one.
I mean, that's so...
It's a downer.
It's so depressing. It really is, you know. But you've got to have the owner be on board with this. And, you know, we have people calling up. And I think if you're a Jag fan, I've said this many times now, if you want to take the patient view that, hey, we got the quarterback in place, I see a young nucleus on offense that has to get experience before you can expect the kind of results that they're going to expect from them. I'm seeing some improvement on the defensive side of the football over the last couple of weeks. If you want to take that view, it's out there for you to take. If you want to take the view that Gus Bradley is 4-18 in 22 games, and that, you know, at what point do we start questioning if he's the right guy? I think as a fan, you have the right to take any view you want.
Yeah, you definitely have that right, and the and it's still a minority that takes the view of, okay, this is a irreparable, you know, unrepairable disaster. Such and such is over his head. Whatever. That's still a very, you know, you only get a couple of those a week, but you're entitled to your opinion because if you just look at the score lines, you would say this team hasn't gotten any better.
Right.
And a couple weeks ago, I would have to agree. I haven't seen any progress.
Through 4 games.
And I would include San Diego in that because it was a double-digit loss.
They said, that's what I'm saying, through the first 4 games of the season.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you have to win a couple games. And, you know, and this would be a big one because if you win this one, then maybe you beat Miami and they're not very good. And
well, if you win those, then you're so far ahead of last year's pace all of a sudden. It's not even funny.
I mean, if you win 2 games, then you think, then you start thinking, okay, do you draft 5th or 6th? Or do you still draft 3rd or 4th? You're not worried about 0-16.
No, you're not. And it just, one win right now would take the pressure off, and a win at home would go a long way as well. You know, just having that, you know, they're competitive against Pittsburgh, but at the end of the day, results are what the results are. You think, though, more realistically, this is a, let me ask it this way. Do you get the sense, did you feel like last year, who put the idea out that 2015 was the year? Because that was the talked about, like, they're going to start from scratch, rebuild it. Next year, they're going to continue to take their lumps but show progress. By year 3, they got to be contending for the playoffs. Doesn't mean they have to make it, but they have to be, you know, late in the season, still have a chance to go to the playoffs. Do you feel that timeline is accurate? And if it's not, who do you think put that timeline out
there? Well, that's an accurate timeline because I think it was permeating throughout the building that, you know, the year 3 is where they're pointing at of, hey, can they go 9-7?
Can they go from, if they win 2 games this year?
That's the thing.
Can they go from that to 9-7?
Because that would be historical improvement.
You've seen it happen with some teams.
You know, it's rare.
Right. I mean, but you could point to examples. It's typically because you add the quarterback to the mix.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Miami went from 1-15 to a 10-win team because they got Pennington in large part. And he played, and he's not a Hall of Famer, but he played much better than they had anything going on.
But again, if you're looking at it from the glass half full perspective you were talking about with the fan base there, yeah, maybe they do go 2-14 this year. There's also never been a team that tore it down as far as the Jaguars did to try to build this thing back up. There's never been a team that is trying to play 6, 7, even 8 rookies at times on the offensive side of the ball at the same time. So maybe with that idea in mind, there is that window for going from a 2-win team to a team that's going to compete for 8 or 9 games.
It's possible.
And also, if the people in this building thought that it needed to be a 2-year process, they would have upped the ante on Alex Mack to make sure.
Right, and a number of other guys. They wouldn't be sitting with $30 million under the cap, and I get that.
They wouldn't have drafted an Aaron Colvin.
But I guess my point being, it's possible that they do that, but let's say they win 3 games this year. Okay, the rest of the way. And right now that you, I don't know, some fans probably take that. What if they only win 6 next year? You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, like, is that enough?
Well, then you start getting into circumstances. Okay. Yeah.
How competitive were you? What were the injuries? How did you lose them? Right.
Yeah. So it's,
you can't fall back on the excuse next year of inexperience though, can you? I mean, they're still going to be, you're going to continue to bring in young players, but that's the direction you opted to go. Nobody said you had to tear it down to the absolute floor. Now, just because you do, that you may think that's the best way to build it long term, but doesn't mean you're guaranteed that these are the right guys in place that are all going to turn out to be what you expect them to be.
I mean, you know, saying you want to build it for sustained long term success is great, but you need to see some short term positive signs. You know, and I think that's what the next couple of weeks are key for, is are some of these younger guys taking the next step? You know, once they've played 450, 500 snaps of pro football, are they getting better? I mean, certain guys are getting better. But on the other hand, and what's killing this team sometimes, your veterans need to play better. They can't be lining up off sides.
Yeah.
Can't be committing illegal contact.
Last week, that drive to open the second half was ridiculous.
It was pathetic.
Yeah, two offsides by Chris Clemens. And then you had Will Blackman with the illegal contact. Yeah. They were all potential drive extenders. The second Clemens offside Tennessee completed the first down pass regardless.
The first offsides was a killer because they were inside their own 20. You would have gotten field position for the first time all game, even if Ace would have returned the punt, which is his average about 7 feet.
Yeah.
This team right now needs to play sound in all three phases, and they're not.
That's another aspect that we've touched on, but we haven't really dwelt on that much, is nothing in special teams that's flipped the field at all. Mm-mm. You know, and if you're not getting explosive plays in the offensive game, or you're not creating turnovers that are flipping the field in that regard, like you said, I mean, any NFL team, if you're asked to go 80 yards to score your touchdowns every single time, is not going to have the kind of success that they want to have. That would be nice to get, whether it's kickoff return out to the 45-yard line, you know, a 20-yard punt return. Mm-hmm. Those would be huge plays for this team right now.
I mean, Todman's been solid. His average is like 26 yards a return, and it seems like he's been okay because he hasn't had a 60-yarder to skew that. But a 50-yarder wouldn't hurt the cause at this point.
All right.
Same with a 15-yard punt return.
641-1010 if you want to get in the final few minutes of the program. We'll look at the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight. Some fun responses today, by the way. Other than the Blake Bortles draft pick, Dave Caldwell's best and worst single move so far in about a year and a half as the general manager of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you, Jaguars today, live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, here we go down the home stretch. Jaguars today coming up at the top of the hour, XL prime time. They'll go until 2 o'clock, web.com, fantasy forecast. Myself, Josh Carney, Fat Tony, Agent Gibbs, coming at you this afternoon here on 1010XL 92.5 FM as we kick off week 7 tonight. It's supposed to be rainy in Foxborough, is it not?
Yeah, it is.
From what I understand. I don't know. I never know if that's going to impact it. You know what I mean? Sometimes you get those. You saw that one in Green Bay, Thursday night game a few weeks ago, and it looked at the start like it was going to be horrendous.
Sure.
It was nothing.
Well, you know, for the Patriots, maybe you're worried a little bit about how much that's going to affect the passing game that seems to have come alive the last couple of weeks. But for the Jets, I don't think anything can hurt the passing game. I mean,
leaving Geno Smith in.
Right. I mean, I don't think anything's going to make it any worse. Maybe the rain will help the Jets.
Honestly,
throw the ball.
In all seriousness, I'm all on the 1-15 train now. All right. I don't care who it is, with Brett Hundley or Mariota or somebody. I've seen enough. I mean, right? I mean, come on. I don't see him ever developing into the franchise guy with the New York Jets.
It's been bad for the first month and a half.
See, the Jets killed themselves. Let's say they do go 1-15 and Oakland managed to win a game. Oakland would win the head-to-head, right? Because the Jets beat them in week one.
Yes.
So you could go 1-15 and draft second.
It's true, but Oakland's got Derek Carr. And, I mean, he's been okay. I don't think Oakland would necessarily go quarterback with the first pick. Now, they may trade out of there, and somebody else may jump them and take the quarterback
and
that they want.
And if I'm these guys sitting at 3 or 4 or 5, you know, you're definitely up for sale if one of those teams, you know, that 7-8 wants to get a quarterback.
Oh, up for sale. Yeah. I think so, too. I mean, we're not getting down that road, but right now,
we're close.
Dominant. Well, no, true, but, I mean, dominant defensive end. I mean, there are a lot of different things you could look at. I know there's a groundswell, a grassroots bring Todd Gurley to Jacksonville campaign going on out there.
How high would you draft him?
For this team?
For this team.
I don't.
Or do you wait another year for a running back?
I think you could get, you know, a guy in the second round or the third round for that matter. And maybe they wouldn't be Todd Gurley. I don't know. I mean, once you get to the point, if you're willing to draft him at 10, and this goes for anybody, why wouldn't you draft him at 3 if you're going to draft him at 10? I don't know.
It's not a money thing at that point anymore.
So. No, it's not. Right. What's the big difference at that point? Unless you're passing up some other elite talent. Now, that's the only reason. But if you feel like he's the best guy on the board, I don't think you say, well, we can't draft him at 3 because he's a running back. You may philosophically downgrade any running back, but that goes into your evaluation process. You know what I mean?
If you're sitting at 3 and you trade down to 10 and pick up a second, you know, that you know, the reason,
that'd be phenomenal.
Yeah. So,
you know, get an extra second round pick. I don't know, Todd. Yeah, that's for another day. That's for another day. We could talk about what was the best. Oh, the worst move Dave Caldwell ever made is passing up Todd Gurley.
That's right.
How do they not take him? Or maybe the worst move will be taking Todd Gurley. Who knows?
Could be.
You don't know how it'll work out. Today we asked you, other than the Blake Bortles selection, what is the best single move and the worst single move that Dave Caldwell has made to this point in time? And Tony, we got some really interesting responses.
We did. Speaking of running backs, from Eric, we got best, quote, even if he's released. Worst, so far, signing Gerhardt, nothing's been terrible yet.
I like that one.
From Mark, we got best move was finally cutting Przinski. Worst was signing Toby to be a featured back. From Gabe, best move, gutting the roster. Worst move, not re-signing Daryl Smith. Hashtag, can I get one and not the other? From
that, Paul, that second one had a lot of traction, the Daryl Smith, in terms of being probably the leader in the clubhouse on the worst move.
No doubt. From Paul, we got best signing Sendarek Marks. Worst, Ty signing Beatles and letting Daryl Smith walk. Hashtag, beat the dead horse. From Matt, we got thought getting the two stud wide receivers in round two will help offense a lot in the future. Worst is letting Daryl Smith go. From Jags Movie Guy, best getting more than a sandwich for Gabbert. Worst, can I blame the Clevelander deck on Caldwell? From Robbie, we got best move even if he's released. Worst so far is Zane Beatles. From Jason, best move even if he's released.
That started to pick up steam, dude, in the middle of the show.
Worst, missing on Daryl Smith. From Duval Doom, best even if he's released.
See, the non-move was the best move, I think they're saying. Yeah.
Worst, Daryl Smith by far. From Punisher, we got best move, hiring Gus Bradley. Worst move, letting Daryl Smith, Terrence Knight, and Eugene Monroe go. From Christoph, we got getting a draft pick for Blaine Gabbert. Hashtag genius. Letting Daryl Smith go, not the best move. From Chad, we got best drafting young offensive lineman. Worst, letting Daryl Smith go. Hashtag beat the dead horse. And from D. Marshall, we got best setting the tone for the franchise, ending 15 talk. Worst, not making Gus start Blake Bortles.
Interesting. By the way, that horse, the Daryl Smith horse, does feel like it's been beaten, but that one deserves to be beaten. I think, if any, I mean, look, I'll kill a guy for not signing a 30-year-old linebacker, but clearly would have been a guy that could have helped this football team over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and, you know, Pot Roast was mentioned in there. Terrence didn't want to come back. I mean, he had run his race here, so.
And the Eugene Monroe is interesting. Somebody even put that in as getting those draft picks that they used, what they're able to do and use in part to trade up to get Allen Robinson. So you look at what that fruit came out of that thing, you know, your boy Log, I've been talking to him about Eugene Monroe and just how would he have been, you know, that whole idea, you could have spent that pick on something else. I don't know what exactly you would have.
So what was his stance?
Taken on Eugene Monroe. Just saying, I said, would you be better off right now in the short term with Eugene Monroe at left tackle? He said, definitely not in the run game. I think he feels that Jokel has struggled more in the pass protection game than he has in the run game. What do you think about the whole Eugene Monroe thing?
Well, I liked it when the deal was made because Jokel, you drafted the guy second overall to be your left tackle, and to get, you know, this was a guy that probably wasn't going to be back, so you got two picks for him that you then turned around to get a receiver. So
right, once you were at that point, I agree with you. I think the question some fans have is, were you better off not going that direction to begin with? Could you have used a second overall pick on something else and then kept Eugene Monroe? I don't think they felt like Eugene Monroe was going to be worth the contract that he ultimately got, and he did get that contract.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at Jokel's rookie deal compared to Eugene's second deal. Is Jokel at, like, maybe 75 cents on the dollar?
Something like that.
Yeah,
right.
So, and it's not total dollars and cents, but they wanted a left tackle that would be here long term. And when Eugene gets done with this contract, would he be 32? 31,
in that ballpark.
So
right,
he got a lot younger there. I didn't have a big problem with that trade. You know, my best move, I think, is Sendarek Marks because he played on a one-year deal and then re-signed extension. On his worst move, I'll go out of the box a little bit. They talked up Dakota Watson for 6 months around here. He stinks.
Yeah.
He couldn't get on the field. He should have been cut.
I don't know if that, to me, that's not their worst move because they don't have much invested in the guy.
Well, I don't care about, because a lot of these guys, it's not a money thing.
No, I get it, but I guess I look at it. It's like they didn't commit. They took a shot, and they hoped it would be better. That, to me, is more of a continuation of boy, if they had Darryl Smith in the linebacking core you'd feel much better about right now. That'd be one less position you'd have to worry about. Whether he'd be an auto or not, it doesn't. You'd feel better about that unit as a whole.
Sure. And I think if you want to look at it, you can basically call, look, he's taking a shot to the linebacker position. He let Darryl Smith go, and none of it's worked. I mean, it feels like letting Darryl go was a mistake. It feels like Geno Hayes hasn't given him much. Kind of the same deal as Dakota. They brought him in, gave him a chance, and he hasn't been great. He's been okay at times for this team. Dakota Watson has given them nothing to this point. So the shots that they're trying at linebacker just haven't worked out for this team. So really, that's the biggest problem that I have with Caldwell at this point, is just the inability to get anything done at the linebacker position, and it's still a glaring area of need for this team 2 years into his time here. The Tebow thing was great, that he came in and shut that down.
The way he did it.
Right. That he shut it down the way he did. I like what he's doing with the young weapons on this offense. I don't mind the growing pains, but I'm not a fan. I don't have to look at it as a fan with these growing pains. I'm trying to take a long point view of what he's doing with this offense, and I really like what I think it can be by the time we get to the end of the season and going into 2015.
But that's what it is right now. It's hope. And hope is great, but hope doesn't put W's on the board either. It's a hope for future W's, and if it pans out to be that way, then we'll say, boy, in retrospect, maybe you made a lot of brilliant moves. Again, going back to how in some corners the Bortles pick was just panned immediately.
They booed him
when they took him. How can you take him there? And now those people at least will hang their hat on Mike Pettine's comments. Well, the Browns weren't going to take him. Well, you don't even know if Pettine's telling the truth. And even if he didn't, you don't know. You can't. Knowing now how good Bortles looks like he's going to turn out to be, no way in hell you risk trading down a single spot if you are the Jags in that situation. You agree with that?
Yes.
I mean, just, you know.
That's why they stood pat.
Right.
Is they thought Minnesota was trying to get up to get him.
And his best move was taking Bortles. Dave Caldwell, his second best move was the conviction to not even think about not taking. You know what I mean?
I mean,
it's one thing if they had traded back and Bortles still fell to him, his best move would still be getting Bortles. Okay? But to not even risk not getting him at this point looks like a brilliant move on his part. That's kind of why we took that out of the equation. By the way, a lot of Facebookers agreeing with you on Cindric Marks being the best move for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Agent Gibbs, you had a quick comment before we got out of here today?
Yeah, you guys were talking about the NFL draft, and of course it's week 7. We want to kind of hold that conversation off for a little bit if we can, but Daniel Jeremiah asked a NFL executive, said if you enjoy silence, ask an NFL executive who the top pick in the 2015 draft is.
No idea, huh? I guess you can go back to the 2013 draft and feel the same way. At least this year you could make a great case for Jadeveon Clowney if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. Most people would the most talented guy. And may still turn out to be, he may be a Hall of Famer. I mean, we just, out of sight, out of mind, he hasn't played. Looks like he has a good shot to return on Monday Night Football against the Pittsburgh Steelers this week, from what they say.
He should be in good condition, and by the time he faces the Jags twice.
There you go. Well, that'd be fun, actually, from one aspect, to see the two first-rounders go head-to-head to some degree. What do you have coming up in the TU?
Let me think.
Some words, writing,
I'll plug my colleague, Hayes Carlion. He's got a story on Cecil Shores for Sunday, talking about some of the things he's done to stay healthy, some interesting things, and also what's his future like, and facing his hometown team, the Cleveland Browns. So that'll be our Sunday main story, and we'll have a bunch of other cool stuff aside from that.
Bunch of other cool stuff will be available from Ryan O'Halloran and company at the Florida Times Union. We appreciate it, Ryan O.
Right.
And David Garrard in tomorrow,
yeah,
as Jaguars Today continues along this week. Coming up at the top of the hour, we've got, or just in a few minutes, I should say, XL Primetime. By the way, of course, Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you today and every day by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking Jaguar fans what drives you, featuring Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, and Tom Bush Mini. You can visit TomBush.com for more information the next time you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle. For Ryan O'Halloran, for Fat Tony, for the absent Lauren Brooks, for Joe Fortunato, and for Agent Gibbs, I'm Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.